You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
You are now listening to the Ride or Cry podcast.
Okay, so today on our podcast, we have Nash.
What up?
He is an amazing singer-songwriter. Let me try that again.
Hey, how's it going?
I know. Hi. I have to be like, oh, yes, here you go.
Hello. I'm talking.
Right, sorry.
But he is an amazing singer-songwriter, but also just like the most positive person on the internet, I feel like.
Sometimes.
Whenever I have a bad day, I just go on your Twitter.
That's dope.
And I feel super uplifted.
That's good. I hope it helps.
But yeah, we're excited to have you on.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
I feel like you've been really involved with a lot of things that we've done. So Emo Night, you've DJed a couple of times. You were just at community meeting, which is something that Morgan does. So it's just been nice to have you part
Free
of
bagels.
It. Also, yes. That's why I go.
I was in.
Oh, it was pizza before.
Yeah, well, it's bagels now.
I feel like pizza has way more of a potential to put me in a terrible mood.
So why?
True. Like, well, because after I eat it. So like, I feel like I don't get like, well, I guess I get hangry if I'm like doing fasting or something like that. But like, I have a bigger issue with like after I eat. I feel like the part of my brain that digests food is also the part of my brain that like helps me function as a normal human and like think and write songs and everything. So like, I have this huge issue with like what I consume affecting my mood in a crazy way, where like most people are the other way. It's like until they consume there. So yeah, so pizza, like that is just a triple play of like, I'm getting heartburn. Probably have a dairy reaction, a lot of carb and gluten. Like, I'm going to be feeling pretty weird. And bagels are, like, essentially the same problem.
It's the same thing, yeah.
Right, totally. But for some reason, I can face, like, 15 bagels and be fine. Yeah. It's very weird. I think it's, like, the acidic nature of the tomato messes me up or something like that.
Yep, that'll
do. Because, yeah, anytime I've ever eaten a bagel, I felt like my life is over.
Which brings me to an interesting thing, which is that, like, pizza is, like, the number one after show consumed food. Like every you're like, oh, like it's the show's done. The only thing that's open in Cleveland is a pizza place around the corner.
Yeah.
And I'm like, can't do it.
I know.
So then I'm just like dying until I get coffee in the morning, and then that holds me over for a while. You know what I mean?
And well, and you always eat pizza really late at night.
Yeah, and that's also another issue. It's like if pizza was more like a lunchtime food, it might be easier for me. But just like laying there and just having heartburn. I found these papaya enzymes that help a lot. Because Zantac, they related to Alzheimer's.
I read that.
Yeah. So I used to take Zantac like because I have all these acid reflux things. But now I do these papaya enzymes. I put one under my tongue as I'm falling asleep. And it helps a lot.
Really?
Yeah. It, like, because papaya has these, like, digestive qualities to it, I guess. I get them at Gelson's.
Okay.
I also have acid reflux. I'm going
to
try that.
Yeah, they're really great. I gave them to my mom, and, like, because she's, like, nightly Zantac vibe.
Yeah.
And she what says it helps Zantac? A lot. Zantac like is, like, a nuclear bomb to your stomach.
Okay.
So, like, literally, like, that's the only way. Like, it is, it's, like, it's got, like, iron in it and all these crazy things and, like, different metals. It's really sketchy, but you pop one and in like 20 minutes like you're totally fine. You have no more indigestion or issues.
Really? Yeah. It's like a more intense like
yeah, you know, literally tums. It's like and it looks like a little shield, which is just like super sketchily subliminal that like it's just like shielding you off, and some of them are mint coated so it's like kind of enjoyable to take them, but like they're they're definitely not good for you.
No,
I like I never have any issues like that.
Lucky.
But I did recently because we had this cake that Caro had her at her wedding. And
you
we
just got married?
I did.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
I have a beef with weddings right now.
Oh, what is your beef?
It's a long story. But
I mean I get it.
Anyway,
I
think cake at a wedding.
We got the cake again for the office for like a project, and we were so excited because that was it was the best cake I've ever had.
Sure.
And I had it, and then I took a lift home, and I honestly, I had heartburn. I didn't know what heartburn was. I've never had
Isn't it scary the first time you have
it? I honestly, like, I was about to tell the driver to take me to the emergency room because I thought I was having a heart attack.
Dude,
and
I
not
know.
To be dramatic, but I genuinely was like, totally. I couldn't breathe, and my back hurt, and my chest hurt, and I was like, I'm having a heart attack.
Right, like, and then you're like, am I just really anxious because I was just at a wedding, and weddings stress me out, and that's a whole no, but like, and now I'm thinking about my future and everything spiraling and, and Lyft driver, like, take me to the...
Oh, God.
Yeah, I was like, please take me to the...
No, but dude, the first time, or, like, if you haven't had heartburn in a while, it's scary. Like, the sensation is crazy. Mm-hmm. It's very similar. I mean, I went and did a whole, like, so my dad had a bunch of heart problems like 10 years ago. So, like, then in my head, I'm like, it's genetic. So, before my album came out in January, I was having a lot of chest tension and, like, literally went and did the whole, like, treadmill. Like, remember in the Santa Claus where he goes and does the whole thing when he's turning into Santa Claus and he's all worried that he's, like, dying? But he's actually just turning into the best thing ever. So that was me. Like, they like, put, like, the chest monitors on me and the whole thing. And the dude was, like, at the end of it, he was, like, sweet, you're fine. Like, they did an ultrasound on my heart because I was, like, this is serious. I'm, like, gonna have a heart attack imminently. Like, and at the end, the dude's, like, you got anything coming up? I was, like, yeah, my album comes out in a week. And he was, like, cool. So could you do, like, 15 jumping jacks a day? And, like, call me in 2 weeks if this is still an issue. And I was like, sure, yeah, we'll do. And I was fine.
So you just had anxiety?
Yeah, I had a tour, an album, singles, like the whole thing, and like all in a week. And I was just like so intense. Yeah. We'll never do that again.
I went to the, I did the exact same thing the first time that I like had acid reflux, and then it turned into anxiety because I thought I was having like a heart attack. And so I went to the hospital and they gave me the EKG and all that stuff. And
then whole deal.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I did it too.
And they were like, okay, like, you have to just go home. Like, yeah, it's fine. You have to
just, like, take a deep breath.
They're like, have you heard of Peloton? Like,
but I feel like you're so good at, or maybe that's since then, you're so good at, I don't know, making sure that your mental health is good.
I do my best.
So, but was it just in moments like that where there's so much going on, it's harder to accomplish that?
I think that, like, everything is a roller coaster. And I think that something that's really important to remember is that, like, what people put on the internet is only a snapshot of their, like, best selves, right? So what I want the world to see is, like, the best version of myself. And to me, the best version of myself is when I'm feeling great and positive and, like, have these, like, inspirational, aspirational, like, motivational things to say and things like that. Like, that's what I want. Like, that's the mark I want to leave on the world. But that doesn't change that, like, I have a roller coaster of bullshit every day that, like, you know, affects the way I feel. And you know, I went and did, like, a writing camp in France last week. And since I've been home on Wednesday, I've had, like, a really intense, like, go with jet lag and, like, arguments with my partner and just, like, a lot of, like, it's been really, really intense and trying to get my eating schedule back on track and not, like, you know, and just when it feels like I'm like yesterday, today, like, I write a good song, I wake up this morning feeling pretty good and confident, and then it's like I leave tomorrow night. Well, I have a song coming out tonight, and then I leave tomorrow night for a college gig for the night in New York. That's another 3 hours of jet lag. Then I'll be, you know what I mean? So it's like my whole life is just kind of like trying to figure out what that, like, baseline happiness is down the middle. And if I, you know, if I have time to meditate or I have time to focus or breathe or go to a garden or, like, do things like that, of course I try to do my best. But it's like, you know, sometimes it just feels like it's all out of my control. And I just have faith that, like, if I stick to the things that I know work for me and I do take that time, I force myself to take the time and breathe and think and all of those things, then things go pretty well. But it doesn't change that, like, everything's a roller coaster. Life is a roller coaster. So.
Yeah, so there's nothing that you do every day that you make sure, like, okay, I have to meditate for 10 minutes.
I mean, I know if I, like, if someone asked me, like, write down, like, what it is to make, like, a perfect Garrett day, I could do that for you, but, like...
Yeah, but you don't have time to do that.
Well, not only that, like, I just don't do it every day. Like, some days I want to lay in bed 5 minutes longer because the dog's being cute, and then, like, that affects me, like, having the 40 minutes I want to, like, lay down and breathe, and then it affects, oh, well, I guess I can't exercise now, and, like, you know what I mean? And it's, like... So, yeah, like, if I was just full robot and could, like, get up every day at 8 a.m. and, like, go into my room and breathe and then, like, go and eat the right things and only eat, like, kale and, like, you know what I mean? Like, if I could really commit to that, then sure, I'd probably feel fantastic. But that's just not realistic with the existence I have, you know?
Right.
Because I'm still going to have to, like, get some semblance of sleep on a flight tomorrow night, wake up, like, sleep once I get to the hotel. That kind of screws my plan for the day, and then go and do a gig and then fly. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Every day is different for everybody, you know? And then I start to get envious of the 9 to 5. Like, I'm like, dang, like,
yep,
I could really, like, do that as a routine, you know? Because, like, when we're in these, like, more creative end of business, it's so difficult to, you know, create a routine for yourself. And then when you're on tours, you know, it's like, you know, wake up and like, well, something I learned from Ashley Osborne is, like, every day the one thing that she tries to do, and I look at her as, like, a tour pro at this point.
For
she's,
sure.
She's done
that. Yeah, like, I've hit her up before we went on our tour last year.
She, like, gets it.
Yeah.
And she was like, the one thing I try to make myself do every day is like wake up and I hit Google Maps and I find like a little coffee shop. Mm-hmm. And every day, I know it's a different city, a different place, whatever, but there's always going to be some kind of hipster coffee shop by the venue. And it's true. And she just goes, she gets the same drink. She sits, she like reads whatever it is for like an hour. And then she like goes back and starts her day. And she was like, that gives me some semblance of a routine. And even though it seems minuscule, it's like super helpful. Yeah. So
she told me that exact same thing last year when we went on tour with 303 and Lil Aaron.
Yeah.
But because our tour had zero instruments, our load-in wasn't till 3, right? Wow. So until then, we would be parked in a Walmart parking lot, for example, because we couldn't, you know, go to the venue. Sure. There was no parking.
Yeah.
And so that completely just did not work because I would walk off the bus. We were in a deserted parking lot. Right. And I was like, I'm losing my entire mind. Like every day that passed, I was like, I'm going to literally just lose it. Cause I couldn't find any sort of routine.
Right. And as the opening act, like the Guarantees were probably not in a place where you could get like a Holiday Inn room or like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I know that grind, like, you know, regard, like sometimes even when it's my tour, like it just doesn't make financial sense to like wake up at a Doubletree every day and at least have that kind of, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, so yeah, like it's super weird. The roller coaster of emotions and trying to create a routine and stuff like that. But you know, it's hard. It's like you try to create this little insular world when you're on a bus or when you're traveling or when you're working or whatever, and it just doesn't always go that way. But
yeah. Are there certain things you do on the tour bus or set it up in a certain way that make you feel?
Well, so like when I would tour when I was a kid, like I was doing a bunch of different things. I would like tour manage or I would DJ or I would do whatever, and just to like be on the road with people. And I was always so overwhelmed. Like it worked for those bands or those people, but like just like the kind of like chaotic energy that was happening on the bus all the time, like it never really felt like a safe space. So on my tours, everything is mood lighting. There's like crystal lamps everywhere. There's I always used to think to myself when I was a kid, like my bus, before I had like an artist thing going, I was like, when I have a bus, it's gonna be like purple mood lighting and Bon Iver at all times. And like I really low-key achieved that. Like we have, well, a big thing we do too is a dry bus, which like because I'm like captain, I can just like declare that. So like, you know, like maybe last 3 nights of tour we'll like light a joint in the front room or something like that, but that's pretty much it. There's definitely no drinking or anything like that on the bus. Like whatever people want to do off of it and then come on it, that's totally fine. But like on the bus, and that kind of creates this way like calm energy that we really appreciate. And then also the other thing that I kind of get to like just declare is that the back room is mine. And so I kind of make that my like meditation room, and people can come and hang back there and stuff like that. But everybody's very aware that like the closer you get to that door, the calmer your energy has to be. There's no like storming into that one, you know?
Yeah.
And I put like Christmas lights up, and we used to have my friend Keith on tour with us, and he'd decorate with scarves everywhere. And like, you know what I mean? Just like little things, but you make a little bedroom for yourself. But yeah, like as you make more money doing tours, it's easier to do that. And then all of a sudden you're like, wait, I'm in a Sprinter again. Cause I'm in Europe and only like 300 people care about me in a city. Like I need to like figure this out. You know what I mean? So, it's like, it's a beautiful thing, but it's also like, you know, like it just comes down to like, I think everybody that travels is miserable. Like it's, I don't know if there's really a way to do it that's comfortable. The best way I ever heard it was like when I saw Lil Wayne, like a couple years ago, and I heard that Birdman's bus would pull. So like, he would be at his hotel all day, like whatever, like the nicest hotel was or whatever. And then he would literally like, I don't know if this is true or not. I'm just putting a disclaimer on this. This is just what I heard. But like the legend was he would like pull up to the back door. His door would open to a ramp where he would walk on stage. As he walked on stage, someone would hand him a mic. He'd do his part and then walk off stage, get back on his bus and go to the next city. And oh, I was like, the fucking wave. Like, like whether or not that's true, I want that. Like, like that
it
is what I
sounds true, honestly.
Yeah, honestly, it does kind of. But like, that just set up in my head, like, all right, that's the goal. You know what I mean? Like, just to, like, walk on vibe, like, play a round of ping pong with the homies and, like, just, like, head on to the next one.
I mean, that's
you know?
The dream.
Yeah, well, really, like, 2 buses would be great if we're really talking crazy, because then it's, like, they can just, like, have their wave over on Party Bus and I can just have my, like, Bon Iver purple lighting room and, like, just, like... But, yeah, it's hard, man. But, yeah, that's what I try to do is just, like, when I'm at home, especially try to create a routine for myself and then do my best to bring that routine onto tour. So the closer I get to travel, the more routine I get with like, okay, I'm gonna do my best to like exercise, meditate, eat right, and then like start my day, drink X amount of water before I drink coffee, and like, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. do all these little things I know make me happy, and then try my best to bring that on the road, but it's not easy.
Yeah. But I feel like you even bring that vibe onto stage, you know?
Yeah.
So fun fact, my boyfriend and I had our first date at your show.
Whoa.
At the El Rey.
That's fire. Yeah. That show was insane.
It was so fun.
Dude, so like that was one of my favorite ones of that tour because I never got to play the El Rey. When I, like a couple years ago, we like skipped it. We went Roxy to Music Box. So I was just stoked for that reason. And then so many people showed up. And what was really fire is that there was like a Travis Scott Grammy party that night. Mm-hmm. So all the industry people went to that and all the homies came to my show and it was still packed. Cause low key I was tripping. I was like, yo, I want to go to the Travis Scott show. Like that sounds insane. It was industry only type shit. Like, like legendary private show. And I was like, damn, my show's that night. That sucks. But then like, I came out, people were stoked. Like, it was like my favorite show I've ever seen at the El Rey. What was the Kanye quote? My greatest regret is I'll never be able to see myself perform live. Mm-hmm. So, like, that, I kind of feel that way about that night. You know, like, most nights it's about other people, but that was a special one for me.
Yeah, it was so fun.
Yeah, I had a good time.
I feel that way about emo night sometimes, too, where I wish I could erase my memory and just go as a
homie, right?
You know? Totally. And just see it and, like, be surprised when people come out.
Right, totally.
But it will never happen, so that's fine.
Well, yeah. Maybe you just let them like you just go as an attendant one night for fun and just like tap out of the DJ moment and just like
nice,
let them run a night for, maybe for like a birthday for you or something like
that. Yeah, but is that what I want to do on my birthday?
No, probably. I don't know what you're like.
I want to go to Joshua Tree and like
what,
turn
yeah
my
what I want
to
do on my birthday is not anything to do with my career. Exactly, just to start there. So like probably not that,
but, yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
But I feel like I've seen you do certain things at shows, maybe pause and have everyone take a breath.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if this is something that was it like you did yoga for like for a meet and greet or did you just do it before?
So, OK, so at the top of the year on that tour you came to, we had my partner's best friend, Zoe, she came with and she was the yoga teacher for me. And then she would also come out and for the Broken Hearts Club meeting, she would lead a group meditation or a group breathing exercise, we called it, so that nobody was like turned off on it, depending on the place in the country we were. Oh, yeah, they didn't want to shut anybody out. You know, Om is just like amen. It's all one thing. And we all, you know, but we tried to teach people about that at the beginning and then we just gave up on it because so many parents would kind of look at us sideways.
Really?
Yeah, definitely. Meditation is not like a openly embraced concept in most of the country. We have to remember we're in a microcosm. So I was just doing my best to bring like breathing exercises and techniques to people. So we started it with that and then it just became like, there's a moment in Dear Insecurity, let's drink some water, take a breath. So right before I do that, it's kind of like a building up to that thing. And then I would just have everybody take a breath together. Because I was like, if I can just get everybody to do that and relax, like, you know what I never want to see happen in one of my shows is like one of those like crowd compression syndrome issues where like people are having such a great time that they're forgetting about the people next to them. So I just want to make sure that there's a general energy of calm energy in the crowd and that like everybody is there for peaceful and positive reasons. And so having everybody take a deep breath halfway through in this like super emotionally charged moment is super beneficial.
Yeah.
And then also just like reminding people to drink water and like enjoy the moment with the people that they're experiencing everything with is really nice.
Yeah. I mean, it's really unique. Nobody does anything like that.
Well, I hope more people start to.
It'd be great.
Yeah.
It'd be great.
I like to think that maybe people have in the past, like
I've never seen it. And
I've never seen it either. Yeah.
Too much.
True. I feel like the only thing I've heard of that's similar to it, and I didn't experience this live, was I heard that at Coachella, the first, like when Home was popping, Edward Sharpe had everybody sit down and then he walked out into the middle of the crowd and then like sat and meditated with everybody during a song.
That's cool.
And then like he was like, all right. And like on the count of three, we're all going to stand up at the same time and like throw our arms up to the sun. And that's kind of like where I was like, wow, like you can really, you know, because like, sure, I can put my hand in the sky and move it left and everybody moves their hand left and right. So why not like apply that same principle to like doing something that's going to make everybody's experience your moment better? You know what I mean? Like,
that's a bold move at Coachella, though.
Super bold. Super fresh, though. Like genius, low-key.
Yeah, that's
like,
sick. Yeah.
Like just like, I'm going to walk out here. And you know he had like some crazy like draping fit on looked dope. Oh, yeah. You know what I mean? Like just like a cape made of ill paisley scarves. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, But I didn't see it. And maybe I've just like overly fantasized the idea in my head. But like, yeah, that's what I always kind of thought would be cool to do, is just like a moment that everybody shares together. So when they go home, they're like, man, that was cool, but the breathing was great. Like, you know, because I always say to people, like, if, like, you know, if they meet at the Broken Hearts Club meeting or whatever, like, come back to my show, great, but like, go to more shows together, meet up and go grab a, like, grab a dinner, eat lunch together, become friends, because like, I'm gonna leave Cleveland. I keep talking about Cleveland, but like, I'm gonna leave Cleveland, I'm gonna leave Missoula, I'm gonna leave wherever I am, and y'all still live within a drive of here, most likely. So like, at least, and it's cool, because now, like, then we did the B Market run, and people would be like, even in that short amount of time, like, we all went to Chicago and now we're in Detroit together. Like, we all did a road trip together and we all met there. And like you were just saying, so to circle around, I think that was the beauty of this tour. Whoa, at the top of the year was like, everybody was meeting and making friends and becoming part of this community. And it was really awesome. And like, you know, like financially, it was like, I was saying to people, like, it's just not about me, because if it was, then like, it wouldn't have happened, because it just like, wasn't like necessarily like beneficial in a traditional sense, like for people, but I know that it was beneficial in like a grand positive emotional energy way. And so I'm grateful for that experience. But yeah, so it's dope to hear that story, because it makes me feel like even more, helps me experience your fulfillment.
Yeah.
Which makes me feel amazing.
Yeah. I mean, I think you should be really proud of that, because you're changing so many people's lives every day. You know, like you said, a lot of people aren't familiar with meditation or even just taking a moment in the day to breathe.
Yeah.
I mean, even though I meditate almost every day, I still get so stressed out and I still get to that point where I don't know how to handle anything. Mm-hmm. And so it takes a long time to even practice that. But some people would never have the chance to be introduced to that if it wasn't for you. And I think that's so cool.
Thanks. Yeah, I think it's cool too. And I like to think that like, if something's meant to find somebody, it's going to find them at whatever point in their path it's meant to find them. So
yeah.
Like, if that was that night for some people, or if that's because somebody goes to that, and then that next week is talking about it, and then they're talking to someone at work about it, and they're like, oh my God, like, boom, like, I want to learn more about that. I'm going to go grab Insight Timer or Calm or Headspace from the App Store and like, learn more about it. And that first person lets go of it, but that person makes a rip. You know what I mean?
Yep,
like, everything has the potential to be. So like, I just like to think we're just like, you know, but also like, maybe meditation's the answer for you. Maybe like a structured religious ceremony services is the right answer for you. Maybe like just drinking more water in your day is the right thing for you. You know what I mean? Like, who knows?
Yeah.
But just open consciousness is like the best thing I can bring to benefit people.
Yeah, exactly. If you don't experience a bunch of different things, you won't know what works for you.
Totally.
Yeah, someone might, you know, be at your show and you ask them to breathe and they're like, I don't want to do that. That's weird. But at least they know that that's not for them. I don't know.
Totally.
Well, they might be surprised. You know, I think it also just like encourages people to be more present, because I feel like at shows, like everyone is just filming it on their phones.
Yeah.
And it's like to just like put that away for a second and like
totally
be in the present moment is super powerful.
I agree with that completely. I used to get super upset with when people were filming, and then actually my sister is 5 years younger than me. She's kind of like my radar detector for youth
what's
culture,
cool.
I guess. Yeah, what's cool. And so I was talking to her about it, and she was like, well, they're not filming to like post about it. Like, maybe when all the phones come out for like, hey, you love your lights down low, they're filming to post about it. But like, so that like their friends know that they were at the Nash show, because that's what their friends will recognize. But she was like, the what they're doing that for is so that like, when I film a show, I go home and I'm showing my friends, like, look at my version of this experience. Like, I'm showing my parents, like, look at what like you paid for when you bought this ticket. Like, she's like, it's a personal gratification. And I go back and watch those shows. So like, she was like, yeah, you can like think that people are going to just like go to YouTube to relive it, but like, what if that moment and the way they experienced it isn't available on YouTube? You know, like, I went and saw Death Cab at Hollywood Bowl, and I left thinking I was some genius, like right when the encore started. Cause I was like, this will be the closing number. It's the last song from the new album. They go on to play, like, you know, Tiny Vessels. And I'm like, man, like, I would have killed to hear that at the Hollywood Bowl. I hate YouTube for it. Not an upload.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the only way I could have still experienced that is if someone I know happened to be there and filmed it, or I had filmed it at the show. And that bummed me out. And it, like, gave me this perspective of, like, man, like, that's why people go ahead and film it. Because it's like, who knows if it's going to be up online, you know? And just because you saw Missoula and Orange County's up, that's a totally different thing for you to relive. So the phone thing, to me, I've given up on in a positive way, because it's like they deserve to be given their experience. in whatever way they want to consume that. Because, like, my time with the vibration of the song ended when I recorded it. And the first thing I do when I make a new song is I want to share it with everybody. So that's just how they're sharing their vibration back with me. And if that's via filming it so they can live that experience as much as they want, I'm totally down with that. But yeah, also, like, in that moment where I ask everybody to take a breath, the funniest thing is when people still are filming that and not doing the breath. Because I'm like, well, now at this point, you're filming a breath. Like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. And that's definitely, but then I, at the same time.
That's what they post.
Exactly. And I love when I see that on my Twitter and I'm like, dope. Like, this is the breath moment. I want to share that. Yeah. And then, like, people are like, now I have to film it because he might repost. You know what I mean? It's like this funny, like, you create it all. Like, it's all like a created thing. Mm-hmm. But, like, it's also so, it's organic and natural, this feeling of, I don't know. It's like a sensory experience for people when they go to shows, because it's the vibration of the bass and the feeling and the screaming and the moment and the experience. I don't know. It's a beautiful thing. And so we just try to create a like a zone. I don't like to say safe space, because I feel like when you're like, it's a safe space, that means it's not a safe space and you should run. It's like when people are like, why don't you trust me? Don't trust that person. You know what I mean? Like, the person that has to ask you, like, why don't you trust me? Don't trust them. Like, they're not trustworthy. But, like, what do you mean you don't trust me? What do you do that? That's like, run. Go the other way. Yeah. So I hate to be like, this is a safe space where we could just experience. It's like, that's whack. But what's cool is, like, and more power to people that feel that way. Like, I just like to think, like, you know, you're coming in here, you're going to have a good time, and, like, everybody's just here for the right reasons for the most part, you know?
Right. Yeah.
But that's been a crazy thing too, like the craziness of having, like, big radio songs, and then, like, all of a sudden, like, that 30% extra of people in the room are just, like, not showing up anymore, and then your, like, room sizes go down. But then what was really cool also at the top of this year is I benefited people's experience because of that, because of that allowed me to say, all right, well, they're not concerned necessarily with, like, the impact of the moment of the big songs. So how far back in my catalog can I go? And how many things can I play that'll get people excited? And, like, you know, and really, like, I know these people are people that are here for me and not here for a moment. It got to a point where, like, yeah, it was, you know, 1,500 people, but, like, one dude screaming, "Hate you, love you," would ruin my whole night. Cause it was just like, how many of you are here for that? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I lost it one night in that way. But, like, it happens sometimes. Like,
you lost it on stage? Or
Really? Yeah. I was in Silver Spring, Maryland. Shout out to Silver Spring. I apologize for this.
Was it at the Fillmore?
Yeah. And, like, I had added, like, a couple. I had one good show there when I opened for Hoodie. And then otherwise, this was, like, a long time ago. I did 3 nights opening for, like, DJs. That it was just a total mismatch. It was the first thing that my agent set me up on when they were trying to figure out, like, where I was going to live, because it was kind of confusing show-wise. So I did these. And the first night, like, it was, like, bottles getting thrown at me, like, crazy. Oh, like, yeah. And I didn't have a DJ. I just had, like, a super track that I was performing to. And it was all my, like, super chill early EP stuff. And, like, it was really rough. So that was my first experience there. Second experience was, like, somewhat of a saver, because I did it with Hoodie and it was just fun and a good time. Third experience there was on this tour. Play the whole show. I come back out for the encore. And the beginning of the encore at that time was a song called I Love You So Much, which is just, like, Rhodes and 808 and a vocal. Like, a moment. You know what I mean? Like, not to be, like, people sing along lightly. Like, it's very, like, it's like Ed Sheeran doing A-Team. You know what I mean? It's just, like, a super, like, it's a moment. And one dude, like, 2 verses in the back row, just, like, full frat voice, is like, "Play I Hate You, I Love You."
Oh, my God.
And there was just a unanimous groan. And I said, "John, stop the song." And this is not something I'm proud of. I'm not telling this story like I'm proud of it. It's embarrassing. Because I used to get like this all the time. But he stops the song and I go, "You guys want to hear that one? All right, play the song. Play it, John." So John plays Hate You, Love You. I do the song. When it ends, I'm like, "Anybody who came here to hear that song can go home now." And I literally put the mic down to my side, crossed my arms, and waited. And I'd, like, lean into the mic and be like, yeah, everybody gone yet? And a couple people left.
Really?
Yeah, I'd say about 100 people left.
Wow.
And, like, I think that's when I gave up on that time of, like, touring. That was the night I was like, this sucks. And that way of touring, of, like, not, like, making it about people and stuff. And anyway, so then I, like, I Love You So Much again. I finished the rest of the encore. We finished the night. And, of course, like, the people that stayed, like, thought it was fantastic. I would hope, like, everybody walked away being like, I got so many tweets that were like, don't let them get to you and stuff like that. It was really positive and awesome, but it was like, in retrospect, super embarrassing. And that habit of mine started in fifth grade. I told everybody the second to last day of fifth grade, there was a talent show. I played Green Day, Good Riddance, Time of Your Life, because I just learned it in guitar class. I broke a string for the first time that day. And like in like 20 minutes before the thing, I broke the string. My dad like goes, gets new strings, the whole thing. I get on stage, everybody's talking, and like three chords in, I'm like, shut up. And just like haven't spoken to anybody from fifth grade since. Like, and I feel like it's just like this bad habit of like feeling the need to like have control over the thing and all this stuff. And it was like, that was that night in Silver Spring where I just gave up on like the self-fulfilling prophecy of shows. And I was just like, this isn't about me. And if this is going to be about me, this isn't right for me to do. And then I took a year and a half off. Then I made an album and went back out. And then I had the experience of the tour you came and saw. Yeah. And I think that like the difference between those two things is like, although maybe not as economically fulfilling at this moment, like, or financially or whatever, according to my business manager, like emotionally, it's positive and cathartic and creative and beautiful. And I'm happy to hear that you had your experience.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's all that matters at the end of the day.
Totally. And like, that's, I realized that like after a long time of feeling like I was proving a point, I realized there was no more point to prove. I had proved the point. I had a 4x platinum single, almost 2x. And like, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. like all this. And like, I was like, okay, like this is it for a little while. And like, sure, that time off, like definitely like a lot of people left and people grew up and people moved on and all these things. So that's why I'm so grateful. And that's why like nights like that one that you saw are so meaningful to me, because it's like, people do still care, and more people are caring every day. You know, Broken Hearts Club goes up every day in streams, and new songs coming out tonight, and people are excited about it and all these things. But it's like, I finally had to give up on the ego of like the shows being about me, the songs being about me, proving this point to people that didn't care that I was proving a point to them anymore. Like the kids in fifth grade watching me that weren't listening, like they don't care anymore. You know, they're going and living their own lives and stuff now. So yeah. I think that a big thing during this last couple years for me has just been letting go of the ego of the whole thing. And I feel like I finally let go of that. And I wasn't ready to put new music out until I felt like I fully like let go of the ego. And now I have, and I'm really proud of that. So,
did Eckhart Tolle help you in that?
A little. Yeah. A little. Yeah. I mean, I definitely listen to Super Soul.
Yeah. Oh my God. Super Soul forever.
Yeah. Shout out to Super Soul. For me, like I love Oprah, but like, it's really for me about the people she has on, and like, just, it's so interesting. And we listened to a bunch of that last year. And well, the biggest thing actually, and you might know Andrew Goldstein. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like I had a session with him and we had this conversation. He told me he read a book that, I've now quoted like so many times, and I should actually probably text him and say I was great. I'm grateful for him for passing that on to me. But he said that success is like a triangle, and that like, the top of the triangle is the word success. And then inevitably, if you feel successful, the next point on the triangle is failure. And so that's like the bottom right corner for everybody listening. And then the bottom left corner is aspiration. And he said that the only thing that blocks failure from turning back into aspiration is ego. And that like when you're able to let go of that, you jump right back into aspiration. And then it's a very quick climb back into success because you're genuinely coming at it from the right place. And so I feel like with the tour at the start of the year, I really was like 85% no ego. And then like throughout the rest of this year, I've just been like slowly like wearing Patagonia shorts and Birkenstocks more and more every day. And like really just like humbling myself down to a certain level of like dad-dom. And like, and now like I feel like I'm like feeling like myself again, and I'm writing songs that feel like myself, and I'm really proud of it. And like, I think that like that really symbolizes, that triangle really symbolizes like where I feel like I've been stuck at, is like that opposite of success point where like ego is just like this brick wall of like, but I've done it once already. I've done it a couple times. Like, why can't I do it again? I don't understand. Like, but I'm also really into the Oprah thing where like, she said that, you guys hear the episode where she said that she was trying to get the color purple, and she'd like call her agent every day after mm-hmm. she auditioned. And then finally one day, the day she woke up and like genuinely didn't think about it, she got the role.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So like, that's been a big like totem pole for my like, what I'm trying to achieve in Zen a little bit, is like just not waking up and worrying about what's next every day, but just appreciating the now and the moment and the present tense.
Totally.
And letting go of the other tension, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's just hard to keep that mentality in the music industry because it's all about that. It's all about like, okay, how many people are coming to your shows? Like, who's streaming what? And it's all about those numbers. And it's just, I don't know. It's kind of just like, who cares?
You know? Well, so I came up with this thing that I'm trying to make like a thing that me and my friends all believe in more, but it's called the one like theory, which is like when I make something or I do something, if I like it, it gets one like, and that's all I care about.
Yeah.
And I don't look after it gets one. And so like, yeah, so I've taken a big step away from social media and just generally being on my phone. I don't charge it next to my bed anymore. I charge it in the living room, and I leave like whatever the new New Yorker is or whatever book I'm reading next to my bed. So like, that's the first thing I pick up in the morning. So I'm like learning and feeling good. And, but yeah, like I think that like, dude, it's just, I don't know. We live in a weird time. But another episode of Super Soul that brought some illumination to this for me was the one where they went back and played the Oprah Winfrey Show episode with Toni Morrison. Did you guys hear that one?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The whole thing about the phone. Did you hear that? Where she was like, I had a boyfriend and like he would like travel. And when he would travel, I would like sit and wait by the phone for him to call. I wouldn't call people because I was worried it would be at a busy signal if he tried to call. I wouldn't go outside to like get the groceries or water the lawn because he might call and I wouldn't hear it inside. And I was like, oh, okay. So the psychology of like waiting for something to change on our phone has been a thing. Like that was like probably in the 80s or 90s, and it's still a thing. It's just like now it's always with us, which is like, I guess more freeing in that example because like we can at least go to the grocery store, but like, I don't think any of us should be restricted in that way. We should all feel like we can like live our best experiences and existences and lives and not worry about that stuff. But it's hard.
It's in really the music hard, business, man. I mean, it's hard in general because I was telling Caro this, like I've been logged out of Instagram for probably like 3 weeks now.
Nice.
And I've logged back maybe a couple of times to do something specific.
Sure.
And which is also hard because a lot of people message me on there about work related stuff, which I've realized I have to create that boundary somehow and maybe make a post and be like, if you need something work related, like email me,
right?
You
know, totally.
Don't DM me on Instagram and then get mad at me.
So funny. Cause I hit you today and was like ETA 1104 on DM. It's like,
well, yeah, I will never see that.
Yeah, it's fine.
I'm just kidding. Like I'll see it. It's but it almost made me depressed for a couple of weeks because I felt disconnected.
Well, and you also felt like you weren't getting like the self-gratification.
Right.
Thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think a big step in like letting go of ego for me has been, and by the way, I still like to say I'm holding on to 1% of the ego. And when I let go of that, when I wake up and don't have that 1%, it'll be like amazing. Yeah. But like the whole like feeling like you're getting the gratification of the likes and the people talking and the posts and the this and the that, like that all probably was a bit of a depression too for you. Cause it was like, you know, you're not getting that every day and you have to like go out into the world and like, you know, it's a weird roller coaster when you leave social media.
Yeah. You like actually have to text people and be like, hey, I, you know, how are you? I don't know.
I found my friends reaching out to me more for the record when I wasn't on social media.
Oh, and, for sure.
Yeah, because not even like in a concerned way, but just like, yo, you want to go on a hike?
Right.
Like, yo, what's up? What are you doing today? Like, because it wasn't like,
it wasn't oh,
cool,
there.
Looks like he's in France. Yep. You know what I mean? Like,
yep.
You know, I feel like it's almost been like more damning to my social experience than friendship has been.
I mean, yeah, and you kind of figure out who your actual friends are.
Totally. Yeah.
Because you know, they'll be like, hey, well, like, what are you doing today?
Totally. Totally. Yeah, there's a big difference between the people that ask you what you're doing today and the people that ask you what you're doing tonight.
Yep. Big mood.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's funny. So you have a song coming out at midnight.
I do. Yeah. By the time this comes out, it'll probably be out.
Oh, your song is out.
Yeah.
So tell us. Tell us.
Oh, it's called Forgive. This is the shirt we made for it. My friend Max made this shirt.
I love that.
But I wrote it with Luke Hemmings from, he's in the band 5 Seconds of Summer and his girlfriend Sierra Deaton. And we had a good day at the house and we wrote this song and been writing a bunch over the last couple months. But this one just felt really good. And I sent it around to people on my team and everybody lit up to it. So we were like, cool, let's put it out. So feels like how things felt a couple years ago. I think sometimes I accidentally over-glorify nostalgia. And like the idea that I used to have everything so planned out and I knew what the EPs were going to be called and all this stuff, where the reality is like I put the first EP out. People didn't really care about it at the time. And I gave up and was going to like not do that and go back to law school because I just finished USC and my plan was to go to Southwestern right around the corner and just like get into law school, be an entertainment lawyer, like do that thing. And that's when Hate You Love You came out.
Okay.
So like I really feel like I'm at that point. Like I was having a conversation with my friend Ahmad, who's a producer on a lot of my stuff, the other night, and it was a super emotional like I'm just feeling like I don't have like a purpose with the Nash Project. And like, I don't understand, like, am I just like beating a dead horse at this point and all these kinds of things. And everybody was like, nah, man, like we really feel like that. And that's what friends are for, of course. But like, I feel like every time I feel like this and I like essentially start driving Lyft like I did back then, things start to go really well. So yeah. Like, you know, like maybe things are looking up. Maybe we've got some bright horizons up, but I don't know. I don't want to think about it that way. I just want to think about it like I'm just appreciative of the daily experience of life and the blue sky that we're getting today. Might be one of the last blue skies for the season, right?
I mean, we live in LA.
Yeah, totally. Not.
I mean, we already had a rainy day.
Yeah, I missed it.
You did? Where were you?
I was in Philly, where you would think it would be raining, right?
And it was, but then it was hot or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was goes.
The hottest
day. It was a nice rainy day.
Yeah.
Oh, it was so great. I actually woke up and was like, I might move to Seattle. Like,
don't do that.
Really? You don't like it there?
Because it's like that all
it's
the time.
It's too much, yeah.
I guess so. Like, but I want to wake up in somewhere. I want to wake up somewhere every day where I look out of every window and there's trees and green. And I feel like it's I really can take a deep breath and not like reach a point where my lungs are like, no more, too much smog. Right. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I want to just like breathe to the bottom of my lungs and just feel fully fulfilled by the environment. And I don't feel like that happens in Los Angeles.
It sure does not.
That's why I want to move to Hawaii or Seattle. I want to buy like a big piece of land and just like make it a creative haven for people to come and hang out.
Yeah. But, yeah. Do it.
Sounds amazing.
That's my next step.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Well, I'm stoked to hear this new song.
Yeah. It's coming out tonight, or it'll be out. It's out.
Is it part of like a bigger, like, are you releasing
right now? We're just doing it to have fun. And then I'm helping other people with their projects right now. Like, my buddy Stevie Wolf is finishing up his first EP and a bunch of things. So I'm kind of playing producer, which is kind of my preferred way to be. Like, my intention with the artist project was just to be taken seriously as a producer and songwriter for other people. It was never intended to be like an egocentrical, Nash thing. It was always meant to like put other people on a silver platter for the world to appreciate, like I was appreciating their work. And so, so I'm definitely getting back in touch with a lot of that, of just like listening and helping and getting, you know, cool things in my email every day that aren't even mine and I have nothing to do with, and just giving thoughts and opinions, and whether or not they actually want to include me is whatever. But that's actually where I thrive the greatest, is like, I see like Pharrell, Rick Rubin, these people, and I'm like, that would make me really, really happy.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, like, and not worry about like, well, then that'll be 5%. Like, I don't care about that stuff. I just want music to be great. And like, I accept that I'm not always going to make the greatest music, and I just want to be a part of whatever it is. It just makes me feel excellent.
Yeah.
I get excited thinking about it. So yeah. So new song tonight, but like not necessarily a part of a bigger thing, coming up, just kind of a thing that I thought was important to say. It's about, having arguments with someone you live with and being forgiven, even though you never even really know the right things to say. So, it's nice. Feels good.
I feel like that'll be very relatable for mostly everybody.
I hope so. I only want to put feelings out that people can correlate to, because what's the point otherwise for me? You know, I feel like the Nash Project is a feeling. And then like, once you're in there, it's just like a divvying of a bunch of different feelings. Cause I think feelings are relative. And like, even though sometimes it's like cripplingly lonely to have an emotion and think that nobody else understands it, like there is a way to correlate every feeling to somebody. And I've been learning that a lot in writing these songs the last couple months. Like, you know, I could be upset about, last night I was writing about being the friend who gets left. And also like, so like the song was about like, I'm deciding to not bail on somebody, but like take a little space from a friendship. And then like I wrote the song from the perspective of the person who's being left. And then I realized halfway through, because the other person was like, dude, I feel like da 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 da. And I was like, that's a super relationship-y line though. And they were like, what do you mean? You're not writing about this from this place? And I was like, no, I'm writing about this like a friend who's getting left behind. And this dude was like, dude, like, are you kidding me? Like, this is about me and my girlfriend and me. And then Ahmad was like, this is about me and my mom to me. And we all had the same, but it was completely different origin. And there was one line about doing dishes. And I was like, this is getting too relationship-y. And they were like, what do you mean? That's what this is about. I was like, well, your friends don't ask you to do the dishes and then you get upset about it.
Yeah.
And they were like, we know. It's like really funny because it was like so, like it was all just in a relative emotion. So yeah, so Forgive Tonight, I just feel like it's something that everybody can connect with on a different level. And I wrote it with a couple, which is cool because they were able to like, Luke would say some shit and then Sierra would be like, that's not how we would handle that. You know what I mean? She was like calling him out on it. It was really dope. I was just like moderating a couple conversation. It was really fun.
That's so funny.
Yeah. So I'm excited about that. I'm excited about whatever's next. And I'm mostly just excited about the things I'm hearing from other people because they're awesome. And just, you know, I just want to be giving. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming by.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Hope I brought a little light and you guys shined a little light on me today and I appreciate it. I start to get in my own head day songs come out because I'm like, well, I see that Ariana Grande every hour before a song comes out says 9 hours, 8 hours, 7 hours. Yeah. So I should probably do some of that. And I'm this morning like, should I hashtag forgive or it's like to be or not to be? It's like, do I put hashtag forgive or do I not? And Rose is like, it's corny. Like, don't do it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, and see, that's cool. That's smart. Like, I don't think like that. I'm just like midnight hashtag forgive. She's like, don't put hashtag forgive. So like, I just hate it. Like, I just want people to listen to it.
You should be like, don't forget.
Yeah, totally. Don't forget. Forgive. That's like the street. That should have been the street campaign. But those
we
are
do this for a living.
Yeah,
it's almost like
no, totally.
An Instagram story countdown.
Yeah, no, but like I want to do stuff like that. But then I also like in sessions, people will be like, oh man, like I got to be on Instagram. I'm like a new artist, and like it's the best way to market my stuff. And I'm like, yeah. Or like I found you in my Discover Weekly, and you could hypothetically just put the best song up of your life tomorrow, never post about it on social media, and it could go like wildfire. Mm-hmm. Like, the world we live in, you don't just die on the vine. It used to be you put a song out and you go on tour, right? Now you put a song out, people find it. You put another song out, people find the first one. Put a third song out, people mm-hmm. find the first one.
Yeah,
like,
so
you know what I mean? You just start like bringing people back in, and you don't really need to obsess over the phone or look at the phone every day or feel like you need to post the cutest picture of your life because your dog looked good and you have a dope t-shirt on and all this stuff. Like, you know what I mean? Like, all that stuff doesn't actually matter if you're just creating and doing and living and being your best self and having your best experience as a human being. That's what we're all really here for, and that's how you can create things that the most people connect with. So
hallelujah.
Yeah man,
so true.
To
preach.
Yeah, don't get wrapped up in the bullshit and the drama. Be yourself.
Listen up, kids.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. These headphones really, Andrew was like, you must use these.
Those ones are hard looking.
I know those. Yeah, you have really intense ones.
Ever heard of stoicism? Chances are, if you have, you've heard of stoicism with a lowercase s and not stoicism with an uppercase s. Lone wolves, no emotions, antisocial behavior, cold indifference. All that is stoicism with a lowercase s. Stoicism with an uppercase s is the ancient Greek philosophy and virtue ethics framework that centers on service to the cosmopolis, to include your family, friends, community, and planet, and the development of a good moral character. My name is Tanner Campbell, and I'm the host of Practical Stoicism, a 3 times a week podcast teaching Stoic principles and concepts to anyone interested through the exploration of texts and deep dives into various moral topics. You can find Practical Stoicism where you're already listening to podcasts by searching for Practical Stoicism or by going to stoicismpod.com. I invite you to give it a listen today. You just might like it.